if you are in the building space, this decade is a really exciting time to be in there. I'm in this space since 16 years, since 2006. I've never seen that much change, even if it's still slow compared to other industries. When I just think about pure software, change is still a little bit slower, but change is happening really for the first time, at least that I'm in the industry.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches. Building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air. Sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser. Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT connected devices and the journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Very. And today we're joined by Stefan Schwab, CEO of Enlighted. We're going to be talking about AI, computing at the edge, and the evolution of the smart building movement industry. I'm not sure. Stefan, we'll figure that out. Stefan, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Great to be here, and thanks for having me.
Okay, so before we get into not even defining it properly, everyone out there knows Siemens. Not everyone is familiar with Enlighted. Can you talk a little bit about Enlighted and how you guys nest into Siemens, what that all looks like? Give us a little background.
Yeah, good point, Ryan. So the 2018, Siemens, during that time called Siemens Building Technologies, looked at the market and where the market is moving. And smart buildings, actually, the term was around for many, many years. But Siemens thought about, okay, what does it take actually to make smart buildings a reality? And they looked at companies and they found Enlighted. And then they acquired Enlighted in 2018 with two other companies, actually, on the West Coast in the U.S. as well. The other one was Comfy. And the other one was J2 Innovations. And today, Enlighted is actually the company which was Comfy before and which was Enlighted. So we combined these companies in the year 21 to create more value for our customers by combining these two different use cases or two different offerings the companies had to, again, coming back to also the idea of Siemens to make the smart building a reality. And it's great that we talk about that today, actually.
Great. So one of the things about you guys' story, the Enlighted story that I think is interesting, it seems like, you know, we talk about wrong side of impossible, things like that on this show. It seems like one of the really difficult challenges for you guys has been, you know, post-acquisition. This feels to me from the outside like okay, there's something here. Now it's a scale. You know, Siemens does things at scale. I imagine that there's been a lot of challenges that you guys have had to solve for technically in terms to, you know, to scale out and match Siemens' scale. What does that look like for Enlighted to be able to go from maybe a brand that people haven't heard of, scale things out, you at the helm? You know, what are some of the technical challenges that you guys have been focused on post-acquisition?
Ryan, your question is actually spot on because on paper, everything looks easy. And I think we also have to differentiate between the technology part, how when a big company acquires a startup, and you also have to think about the cultural topic. And on the cultural topic, I think you can spend hours in talking about these challenges, how to overcome it, how to deal with it. From a technology point of view, it's actually, in my opinion, even a little bit simpler because technology doesn't have the obstacle of how can you bring back together cultures. So from a technology point of view, we actually created together a roadmap how actually Enlighted can benefit from Siemens's technology. And also the other way around, how Siemens can benefit from Enlighted's technology. And let me give you one concrete example. So Enlighted, it's all about at the intersection of space, people, and work. So this is where we focus on. And at this focus point, we actually deliver for our customers productivity, space utilization, and CO2 reduction. And actually, when you combine this, what we do at this intersection of people, space, and work with what Siemens is doing in the HVAC area, then you actually can create far more use cases for the customers when you combine these two different sets of data. And one concrete example, I'm sitting here in the room, for example, and with our technology, we can figure out how many people are in this room and what does this mean actually for the energy consumption, how much fresh air do I need to blow in, what is my personal feeling at the moment, is it too hot, is it too cold for me, but also how do I like the lights in here, which then plays back, coming back to the overarching system, like the building management system, And with this data, you can save a lot of energy, and you can create a comfortable environment for the individual, for the human being in the space.
I know that one of the things you and I have talked about before is the smart home, the smart building evolving from, I guess what I would characterize as like finding ways to wedge people into the smart home. So smart building first, people need to figure it out. Now it's people first, smart building kind of built around with the people at the center of the concept. I'm not sure I'm getting that exactly right. It's early in the morning as we're recording this episode, but like, can you talk about the evolution in your mind of how the smart building has changed, even at a conceptual level? Because it feels like it's moved a long way. You know, I was joking with you before about like it all started with those motion-oriented lights. You know, so you'd be in the bathroom and the lights go out on you. You know, because they're trying to save a nickel on lighting costs. Now it's really focused on a people-centric approach that looks nothing like where it started. But of course, this is how evolution normally looks with a big enough span of time. What's your take? Am I even close to correct on this?
Yeah, a great topic, Ryan, and I think you are close. So what we sometimes tend to miss is actually that humans, or we as people, are in the center also of technology, because without us adapting to new technology, it's not going to work and make the impact we all envision for. And also, I would call, actually, this is my opinion, what people call a smart building is actually not a smart building, because it's still looked at in a siloed way, that we look from building discipline to discipline. And you have to look at it holistically, what technology can do for you. But again, coming back to what you also raised in the aspect of humans are in the center of everything what we do. And why is this also so important? Because we have seen in the last 3 years with this massive disruption with global events happening that the buyers or the influencers of our buyers are more and more down to the individual. And the individual has a certain expectation, which comes in, which is for me, a consumer-like expectation. What you get today when we go in any kind of the known platforms like an Amazon, like a Spotify, like a Netflix. So there is a certain expectation. And even if this is not the person who will, for example, send us a purchase order to implement the solution on the customer side, their influence at our customers is increasing on a monthly basis, what I see and what I hear. And that's the reason we also have to think differently. We have to think more in a consumer-grade way when we want to be successful in implementing smart buildings and the technology. Not only we as Enlighted, also think broader in the industry, what we want to provide to our customers to make actually, yeah, to drive these things around productivity, space utilization, but most and foremost, in my opinion, the topic of sustainability and CO2 reduction.
What's an example of one of the hardest problems you guys are working on right now in smart buildings? Like, what really occupies your mind on the technical side of the house? Hey, if we can solve this, this is going to drive a lot of customer value, or maybe customers are clamoring for a particular thing. You guys haven't been able to quite solve for it yet. Can you give any examples that look like that?
Yeah, I mean, two topics immediately pop into my head. So one is that we have to make it as easy as possible for customers to adapt smart buildings. I think today it's still a little bit too complicated. There are many surveys out there when you ask executives why they are not moving forward with implementing certain kinds of technology. And it's always in the top, I would even say top two reasons, but definitely top three reasons, is you have to make it easier to implement. It's still too hard to implement IoT technology / smart buildings. And then secondly, also at the moment, which is very exciting for me as well, is the discussion and the topics around edge devices, that in the past, a lot of things have been done in the cloud, and sending data to the cloud is still in many discussions a huge topic. And customers are hesitant to send data to the cloud because of data privacy. Are they secure there? What do you do with my data in the cloud? So the move into having edge devices doing parts of this, what has been done in the past in the cloud, will also definitely help us to implement smart buildings faster and also to implement more smart buildings. Look today at a global scale. I would classify, when I look at all the buildings around there, so commercial buildings, not talking about residential buildings, we have less than 10% which I would really call smart buildings. And so there's lots to do because, again, and I know this term is, I think, already overused, the smart building term, because it's around since over a decade now. But what I'm actually excited about is that now we are actually in a decade or in an era where what we promised or what we said is possible in 2010 is actually happening now.
That's a great segue. I had one more question on that topic. What can you, is there an example that jumps to mind? I mean, the amount of sensor data being generated by, you know, some of these smart buildings must be enormous. And Siemens being one of the hubs of this data, you know, because they're not just a device manufacturer, they are the guys doing everything. Are there any examples of learnings that have been surprising from you guys' end where as you've looked at the way people are interacting and sensor data coming in, you're saying, my God, this is 180 degrees different than what we would have expected if we had gone off gut feel instead of, you know, what the data was suggesting? Any examples of like, and of course, I'm not asking to give away state secrets, but, you know, something that maybe is now open secret or that others know as well. Have there been observations that you guys have been able to use from the data to inform a really surprising change in direction or result?
Yeah, actually, I have one interesting but also a little bit sad example. It comes from California, from Santa Rosa, where we are installed with our sensors in a building. And as our sensors has also the capability to sense temperature, when there were the heavy fires in California in the year 2000, and I think it was 16 or 17, so this was before my arrival. I came here 2018 from my last role in Australia. What we saw there in the building, actually, or what we could tell then the fire department afterwards, because we have the recording of the building with the data we collect until the fire cuts the power. But what we have seen until then is actually from where did the fire come? How did the fire progress? And how long did it take to cut off the building of the power? So you also could see the temperature development with the sensors. And this is something we never envisioned, that this is also something we could do. For example, if it's not a bushfire, the use case would be if our sensors are installed, you quickly can tell people who have to investigate the fire, where did the fire start? And yes, you can also do that with camera-based solutions as well. Camera-based solutions always, and I spoke about that before, the data privacy, a huge topic. And with camera-based data, it's even a bigger topic. First of all, you populate more data with cameras. And secondly, also the data privacy is even more a concern to customers. So the data we collect is not camera-based. It's with passive infrared, temperature sensor to Bluetooth radios. And again, coming back to my use case, this was something I never thought about before, that this could be something our sensors can provide. And when I think more broadly, actually, this world of IoT and what it opens up for us, I think the use cases are almost endless, at least from today's point of view. I might speak differently in 5 years from now, but today I'm getting actually approached from our customers or internally from my colleagues that they thought about this use case. Hey, when we look at this data, can we make sense out of this data and create this use case because it helps the customer? So I think many, many, many opportunities there.
I was just going to say the opportunities are endless as long as you can do something with the sensor data that you're generating. That we see that at Varie all the time, that people have far more, their ability to generate data is far outstrips their ability to do interesting and useful and valuable things with it. I want to actually focus on that. Let's talk about AI. So I'm required by law to say AI a certain number of times on this show. So what are your thoughts on the role of AI in the smart building? Does Siemens have kind of a stance on that? Are there some applications that you are excited about with AI? I mean, as we sit here now, early in 2023, AI appears to be just about to totally explode after 20 years of like increasing growth and promise. We appear to be there now. What's Siemens' take on this? What's Stefan's take?
I mean, amazing topic, Ryan. And yeah, we spoke about that before. And I also then last night again used, for example, ChatGPT, which is one example how AI is making our life or how it's changing our life and making it easier. And I was not actually into AI or that deep. And I'm not an expert, by the way. I'm not claiming I'm an expert, but I'm totally fascinated by it and how it can help us. And yeah, I was just last night and using again a ChatGPT and just checked out, okay, what do they say about Enlighted? What do they say about our company? And then from them, I moved on and on. And really, really interesting what this chatbot does there for you. Coming back to how it helps, what I see the role in AI for example, our company, I cannot talk completely on behalf of Siemens. What I know is actually that it's Siemens takes this also very seriously. And they also look at it from an angle like we do, that where does it help our employees? Where does it help our customer? Where does it make sense? And I mean, I have one example. When I look at, again, when I do, when I go shopping online or when I want to have a consumer grade experience, a lot of time get these chatbots. And for example, these chatbots also can help our customers. And I come back to what I said before, make it as easy, as simple for the customer to deal with you, to implement solutions like that. And I think their AI or chatbots like we see today on other shopping platforms really can help and really get you closer to the customer, resolve problems much faster. So I personally also like that when you ask Stefan, as a person, to have this opportunity with or the experience I get with these platforms using these chatbots. Another one, for example, is what we work on, which is a huge topic, I think, these days, is what is the real hybrid work model, or what is actually the way of working we as a company define for ourselves? When I say we, I mainly talk about the industry itself or every company who makes the decision how they wanna implement their hybrid work or complete remote work model in the future or completely back to the office. So what we actually try to do there is with using AI, that for companies who implement hybrid work, to make a recommendation for their employees when they should come to the office by actually matching their preferences, figuring out with whom do they collaborate the most, what are their topics they are working on, and then our application makes a recommendation, for example, for Stefan. Hey, Stefan, the person you collaborate 8 hours a week is coming to the office on Wednesday. Maybe Wednesday is a good day for you to come in as well. So that's also where I see benefits of AI and helping us as Enlighted to drive the value of our solutions and then also drive value for our customers when it comes to this topic of what's the future of how we want to work together in this company.
Okay, so future of how we want to work together. I want to go deeper on that. The hybrid work model to me. Okay, now we're this is an IoT show, not a remote hybrid. You know, like that we're steering a little bit. I love my derails, so this will be my one derail of the episode. It feels like hybrid isn't going to totally be the value is not going to be completely unlocked until there's. Right now, I sense from corporate America a real hesitancy to allow people to work from home because they can't. It feels like corporate leaders are uncomfortable with the loss of line of sight. You know, so they're not sure: are my people productive? You know, am I losing productivity? If I can see them, I feel better about it. And so, it feels like kind of the last mile here is corporate leadership is looking for some way to be able to track productivity, so that they can, you know, in their mind, fine tune the right blend of in person, at home, get it right for workers, get it right for the company. I don't know that I've got like a perfectly formulated question here, except that that feels like a really critical piece. What's Stefan's take on this? And again, Siemens as well. Like, what's you guys' view on how do we get hybrid fully, quote unquote, there?
Thanks, Ryan. This is actually a point I love to discuss and debate with my peers, with leaders in Enlighted, with leaders in Siemens and so on. So I personally believe there's a disconnect between an individual worker and executives. And why is that? So look at me as Stefan, as an individual contributor to the overall bigger Siemens enterprise. I believe when I just look at what I do, I'm more productive, effective, if I just work from home every day and don't collaborate, because I can really be focused on the things I do. When I look now at Stefan, the leader of Enlighted, I also believe that because I look at the whole company and not at a siloed, I have not a siloed view, I have the overarching view. I say we are less productive than we have been before, as we have been able to come to the office. Enlighted never had a full on-site working culture. We always had the flexibility of hybrid, but people actually made it hybrid. today, when we call it hybrid, it's 80% remote. It's not hybrid, in my opinion, how I would describe hybrid. So coming back as a leader, I say we need more man hours putting into the company for the same output compared to when we had the culture where we got together in an office or in any other environment to sort out things. And this is really missing. And there's an interesting stat I use a lot of times when we look at patent filings, and this is actually public knowledge. I don't share any secrets here. The patent filing or the amount of patents filed in the second year of the pandemic went down for hardware companies dramatically. This by itself might not be surprising, but when you look into the details why this happened and you do interviews, is that to get to an innovation and to be able to file a patent, you have to get together and work on the things in a collaborative way. And these tools we don't have today when we all sit remote. These tools are actually when human beings are together in a room using a whiteboard or using whatever they want to, they need to use to innovate. Then innovation is happening. And this is a bigger topic actually for hardware companies than it is for software companies. We can elaborate on that further even more, but no need. But this is actually for me also a sign that, this is my take on that, that we lost productivity, we lost innovation because we went fully remote and we told employees you have to go fully remote because there's a pandemic and we have to get this under control. And nowadays, we also have to help humans to come back in a hybrid way, because most of the time, voluntarily, it's not happening because human beings, we create habits and we are then following our own habits or our own routine. So again, like we had to tell them, you have to work from home, because it also was hard for us at the beginning not having employees in the office. They wanted to come. So we had to tell them it's mandatory you work from home. So, and also now I think we have to give them some guidance to come back in this hybrid work model. I'm not a fan of 100% in the office, because there are activities during the week where you are more productive for certain activities at home. I give the example when I just need focus time and doing emails. But also there will be times in the week where you need to collaborate with others. And for example, coming back to technology and AI, what I mentioned before, we also have the opportunity to give them tools at hand to make this decision when to come to the office, when is a good time to collaborate with person or with colleague XYZ or leader XYZ. We have to give them tools, and they are there. We are working on that to take away this cognitive load so that they can make an easy decision without thinking about it, using many tools, texting, email, Slack. Are you in the office? Are you not? From when are you in the office? To give them this opportunity. And then I believe we will make hybrid the reality. I think the future for most of the companies is this, what I describe now as a hybrid work model, a couple of days in an office setting, couple of days in a remote setting, if it's home office, cafeteria, a nice beach. In the end, everybody can decide and follow the policy the company put out there to make her himself as productive as possible.
You know, I'm smiling for folks watching, just listening and not watching the video feed. I'm smiling because I just agree with so much of what Stefan is saying. Very, the company that I run behind this podcast is a remote only hardware development company. And it is extremely hard. And we were remote, you know, we had 5 years to prepare for COVID. Of course, we didn't know COVID was coming. But I mean, before COVID arrived, we had been doing remote hardware development for 5 years. You can't just spin on a dime and become a remote hardware company. In some cases, you know, you may not ever get there at all. You know, hardware is a famously collaborative in-person activity. And even for Very, we're now running up against the upper bound of what can be done remotely. So it's, you know, I do think this hybrid model feels like the future. I want to return to the smart building. I have one question about, you know, and this may push Stefan totally outside of his comfort zone or the area of focus. Or maybe not. But when most people think smart building, they are thinking, I think, you know, lighting, HVAC, what I would call, you know, stationary solutions. So like the light switch on your wall is going to be in the same position tomorrow as today, not things that necessarily move around. We had a guest on the show, I don't know, a year ago or so, Cobalt Robotics. They make a robot that does security. You know, they go up, down, they can operate the elevator, you know, they're basically going around the building and providing security. When do you see the smart, or do you see the smart office, you know, starting to creep into the domain that maybe would have been thought of as the office manager, you know, a robot that is like a Roomba, you know, it's on the move, it's solving office problems. I don't know, maybe it's doing some remote cleaning. Maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe that's already there. Maybe Siemens is already way, you know, all over that problem. What is Siemens kind of position and strategy, and does Enlighted have a role in this as far as, I'm sure this is not the right term. I'll call them like non-stationary assets in the smart building, things that move around, things that have wheels, things that interface more directly with the people in them. What's your view on that?
I mean, it's an interesting question. I come to that in a second about how robots here can help, or what's their role when I think about smart buildings. I wanted to, you mentioned before we derail a little bit with the hybrid work model. I actually think you haven't derailed at all, because in my opinion, a smart building is also at the core, together with humans, when you want to make hybrid work reality. Because again, there is an expectation for the workforce when they come into an office setting that this building actually provides them a top-notch experience. And the top-notch experience has many facets to it, but when we talk about technology, I truly believe that technology also there plays a key role if employees say, okay, I love to come to this place, because besides meeting my peers here, or besides meeting the people I want to collaborate with, it's so easy to work in this environment. It goes from getting the elevator, getting to the right floor, the amenities, all these kind of things together make it for me enticing enough to come back to the office. So just what I'm saying, it even isn't that far derailed from the discussion around IoT, AI, and the topic of sustainability. Coming back to the topic of what can robots actually play, what role can they play when we talk about making smart buildings a reality now? We use it today, but mainly for when it comes to implementation. So let me give you one example. We experimented a lot with these Roomba vacuum cleaners, or these robot vacuum cleaners. Doesn't have to be the brand Roomba. So again, no preference for that. A robot vacuum cleaner in general. And as we install our sensors, which are connected to the lighting, so statically and actually connected to the lighting, makes a lot of sense, because we also want to drive sustainability, so it reduces immediately energy consumption. But when we activate them, so we have to actually point them in a map or put them in the right position in a map. And today, humans are doing that, going through the floor and the space with a laser pointer. And we thought about, hey, if you have automated cleaning there, this also could be done by some of these robot vacuum cleaners, because they go around everywhere if there are no obstacles. That's a topic which we have to figure out. But then actually they could activate automatically when they anyway run through the space. They can activate our sensors, and it makes it also easier again and for us to implement, because they are going through the space is also always a bottleneck, which makes it, again, a little bit slower to adapt or implement technology as we do. So this is what we're experimenting at the moment. Also, we also thought about flying through with drones and figuring out the space itself indoors. You know, how is the space? Where are the obstacles? Putting that then into the map automatically. So that's another idea we are testing at the moment. What you always have to think of as well, are there enough benefits by doing it? And secondly, can you scale it? And then does it help your customer in the end? And clearly there are benefits, but there are also some things we tried out and we say, okay, doesn't work at all. For example, this vacuum cleaner, because there are so many obstacles already in an occupied building, because sometimes we implement in occupied buildings, there's not new construction. So then you have this issue of, okay, the robot doesn't get around these obstacles, so it cannot activate the sensor.
I know that one of your early test beds, I think, was one of your corporate canteens, from what I understand. It feels like there's maybe an opportunity, you know, in this smart building ecosystem to rethink the canteen, maybe dedicate more space to what I would say kitchen space, creating food, and then having that meal consumption be offsite, you know, so you're maybe automating food delivery, bringing the food to where the people are instead of the people to where the food is. You know, this is a crazy on the fly thing. Is that the kind of when you're thinking about the footprint of a building, you know, if you can reduce the size of the in your word, canteen. Some people might think of it as cafeteria, but you know, that's a lot of space that's only used for approximately 90 minutes a day. I got to think that's like some of the lower bang per buck floor space in a commercial setting. Is that a valuable problem to think about? Is that something that you guys have thought about in the smart building world?
Yes, so it comes up. What is interesting, I like your canteen example, and thanks for reminding me of that as well, because the canteen example also ties into another use case. And the other use case is that if you know how many people in a hybrid work setting come to the office, you can prepare accordingly also your meals, and you don't have to prepare too many meals and then throw away a lot of the food, which is also kind of waste. And when we talk about sustainability, again, ties back to sustainability. But you also can give information about how is the occupancy or the waiting time in the canteen if you know how busy it is at a certain moment in time. And this data is also available. And then let me go from a time point of view, one step back. At the beginning of the pandemic, when we implemented our solution across the whole Siemens world for roughly 300,000 employees, because it was COVID time, so actually there was the requirement. We have to limit occupancy, especially in canteens. So we are not allowed to have 100% occupancy. And for example, if the 100 people are allowed in the canteen, we had to limit it to 25. So you needed that specific information because, again, nobody wants to have someone standing at the door and making counts how many people went in, how many people went out. Technology is there. You don't need to do that. And we could do that, or we have been able to provide this data not only for Siemens, but Siemens is a prominent customer because they rolled it out across the board, but also for other customers. We were able to provide this information to help them to limit occupancy at the beginning of the pandemic. You're right with the space, and this ties also back to what I said where we play when I think about space utilization. Yes, the canteen is only used for this 90 or minutes or 120 minutes a day. So what else actually can you do with the space? And this depends now from customer to customer. We have seen customers, they are actually completely clearing the space and don't have tables anymore. What they bring in is food trucks. Every day, a different kind of food trucks. And when lunch, for example, is over, the food trucks go out and the space is free. And there's a meeting room or in some, like in our facility, you could have a foosball table. You can have ping pong and so on. So, yeah, these are ideas. Ties also back to what I said. There are so many use cases we sometimes don't think about and customers approach us then. And it's great that with the technology available, you can realize them.
I love it. One question I have, you know, you guys are doing a lot. What are some things that you're excited about? Like give the audience a look ahead, 23, 24, Enlighted, Siemens, smart buildings. What are we going to see? What are you excited about? What should we be excited about?
Yeah, great question. And actually, again, no video, but I'm really excited about the space we are in and the time we are in this space. Why do I say that? Comfy and Enlighted companies got founded around 2010, 2012. I think both what they did very early in their markets, creating a new category in the workplace experience market and so on, it wasn't there at all. Yes, the smart building talk, as we mentioned many, many times already, was there, but there was no real progress to really do smart buildings. What I see now, driven through, unfortunately, a pandemic, driven through humans more at the center of the decision-making process, again, not cutting the PO, but really influencing the decision and what they can demand. And last but not least, also the biggest challenge I believe we have as society is the topic of reducing our CO2 footprint, energy consumption. These are three main drivers which make this decade so exciting because they will drive to make smart buildings a reality. With all the other benefits coming from AI, coming from the topics of edge devices, coming from the topics of robots, which can help us to implement solutions like that faster. So very excited to be in this time. Secondly, very exciting to be in this space. And what's next for us is the topic of ecosystems. I am a true believer in ecosystems, and I've never seen the opportunity to work with so many different companies compared to the IoT space we are in with Comfy and Lighted, but also with Siemens. And so just Siemens also recently in June last year launched something called Accelerator, which is our open digital business platform. So I hope most of you have heard about it because this goes in the same direction. What makes me exciting, this topic of building an ecosystem partner, which is maybe one day your competitor, the next day your vendor, the next day your client, to really make this space we are in a better place for, again, the topics we just spoke about in the last 30 minutes or so. So really excited. It's a great space to be in. Everybody who asks me for career advice, I say, if you are in the building space, this decade is a really exciting time to be in there. I'm in this space since 16 years, since 2006. I've never seen that much change, even if it's still slow compared to other industries. When I just think about pure software, change is still a little bit slower, but change is happening really for the first time, at least that I'm in the industry.
Last question. You've been at Siemens for, you know, for a long time, and you've seen a lot. You've seen a lot in the smart building space. My favorite question to ask guests is, who's doing good work in IoT? In your case, you know, we could say smart building. It could be as broad or as specific as you'd like. Who's doing good work out there that you think not enough people are talking about?
Many companies do good work. It ties also back to the topic of ecosystem, why this is so exciting. You get introduced to so many, many companies and all have in mind, again, coming, making this place a better space or making the space a better place, targeting the most pressing topics we have as society. So a lot of great companies out there always have the customer at the center. So humans, again, customer humans, this is very important to be successful. When I think about us, two great companies we also work together, which is Brightly. This is a recent Siemens acquisition from summer last year. Brightly is a big player in the computerized maintenance management arena. So a great company also based here in the US. We work together with them where we bring benefit to the customers. They with their maintenance software, and then we provide additional data from our sensors. And another one also acquired by Siemens at the same time, Enlighted and Comfy got acquired in 2018, is Mendix. Mendix is a low-code platform. And also there from time to time, if you have to make quick and easy changes to our solution, we use Mendix or their low-code opportunities to create a certain user interface for our customers. So again, these are two great companies. I think most of you have heard of Mendix. Low-code is especially the developer arena, I think, known broadly. And Brightly, just a recent acquisition from Siemens. Very excited about both of these companies. But also to add again, many great companies out there, also not owned by Siemens. Today, you don't have to own everything anymore because there's also the beauty of ecosystem. You partner with others to create value. And I think this is also a shift from the past where we believed we need to own everything. When I say we, not talking about Siemens, I think we as the industry. So today, partnerships getting far more important than acquiring all the time companies.
A whole topic for another day is not needing to own everything is a memo that Amazon and Google have not gotten on the smart home side of things. You know, so I have like misspoken a few times, say smart home, smart building. It's great to hear that smart building is thinking of things collaboratively. Smart home, we'll see. Hopefully Matter is going to go a long way towards solving this, but it feels like the smart home industry could use more than a dose of that. Mr. Stefan Schwab, thank you so much for being on the show here today.
Thanks again for having me. Really enjoyed this conversation. Time flew by. I can't believe it that it's already over. Thanks again for having me. Had a really great time. And again, some additional ideas with your questions again popped into my head already. So I will go out there and just debate it, for example, with some of my peers, what they think about that.
Well, don't be sad it's over. Just be sad it happened, as they say.
Good one.
And to the audience, thank you for joining today. Join us next time as we interview another executive and talk about what went wrong on a journey that went right. Over the Air is brought to you by Very. To find out more about us, head over to verytechnology.com. And to ensure you never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever great podcasts are found. And as always, 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated.